I am not ashamed of the good news, the gospel. And this is good news about messianic salvation through Messiah Yeshua, the Lord Jesus, because this message unleashes the power of God to bring salvation. And that is our greatest need, salvation from the real and deadly forces of Satan, sin, and death. This good news unleashes the power of God to save people who believe the message, first to the Jewish people and then to the Gentiles. Well, shalom. This is Rabbi Loren coming to you live via Skype from the studios of Congregation Shema Yisrael with Jesus Made Me Kosher. And my co-host, Rabbi Glenn, is also joining us today.
Delighted to be here.
And Rabbi Glenn, it is great to have you. Today we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to interact with something that's going on in the culture, and that is a hot new movie that came out at the end of last week called Hunger Games. Both you and I have seen this movie. I saw it. I thought it was very powerful, very well done. I can't stop thinking about it. And Rabbi Glenn, science fiction and fantasy are my favorite kind of genre, and I just think that it would be worth our time today to talk about this new movie and the books that it's based on, Hunger Games.
I agree, Rabbi Loren. The whole sci-fi genre is a genre that you and I have always both liked, and in particular, I tend to gravitate toward anything that's like post-apocalyptic, and it sort of has that feel to it. It takes place in, you know, it's in the future. We're not told exactly in the movie how far in the future, but it's a very powerful movie, and just everybody has been Skyping about it, tweeting about it, talking about it, and it's got moral and spiritual implications. So I'm really glad that we can actually discuss it today. And Rabbi Loren, let me mention to our listeners that if you saw the movie and you want to chime in, we'd be happy to take your call. It's 866-423-9578 if you want to get in on this discussion. So Rabbi Loren, talk to me about your impressions on this.
Well, here's the background, Rabbi Glenn. It takes place in the future. War has ravaged the United States, and most people are very, very poor and close to starvation. They're hungry, hence the name Hunger Games, while those who live in the capital city live in decadent luxury. And there are games, much like the games with the gladiators. And 24 teenagers from 12 districts, two from each district, are chosen to compete in these survival games, but they're games to the death. 16-year-old Katniss Everdeen volunteers in her younger sister's place. Her younger sister is chosen to compete, but the older sister, Katniss, volunteers. And she is forced to rely on her sharp instincts when she's pitted against highly trained tributes who have prepared for these games for their entire lives from other districts. And if she's ever to return home, Katniss must make impossible choices in the arena that weighs survival against humanity and life against love. And let me just say that this movie, which I thought was extremely well done, is based on Suzanne Collins' best-selling novel, the first in a trilogy that has over 26 million copies in print in the United States alone, and it has spent more than 180 consecutive weeks, more than 3 years, on the New York Times bestseller list.
It's stunning, Rabbi Loren. My daughter, Anna, and I had not known this previously, has read two out of the three installments in this series. And so when they announced the movie was coming out and all the ads and everything, she, of course, was desperate to see it. I really wouldn't have taken it upon myself to go see it, but for the fact that since it was inevitable that my children were going to see it, I wanted to see it so that I could discuss its implications with them.
Well, how about you and I discuss it? And maybe we can involve the larger Faith Talk 1500 audience if they want to call in at 866-423-9578.
Sure. One of the first things that stands out to me that's a very good example, there's a lot to like about this movie. As disturbing as it is, there's a lot to like about it. The first, and you alluded to it, that our protagonist in the movie, who goes by the name of Katniss Everdeen, when her sister Primrose is selected to be one of the tributes from District 12, which is their particular district, she knows that her sister will not survive this. In fact, only one of the 24 is supposed to be allowed to survive it. And so she knows her sister will be dead. And so when they call her sister's name, she freaks out. She says, "I volunteer." And which is considered an unheard of thing. Of course, they'll take her, but she volunteered and went in her sister's place. And that shows me a very good moral lesson about giving ourselves for the benefit of somebody else.
There was that good moral lesson of self-sacrifice, giving up your life to save another, a very Christian theme. I really appreciated that as well. There was a bunch of dark themes, though. There was a decline of the Roman Empire theme going on. And Rabbi Glenn, I can't help but make those parallels to what I see as the decline of the American Empire in our day. And I'd like to talk more about this, but there's the theme of the corruption of the political system, where you have a very small elite in the capital city who are living in decadence and luxury, and 99% of the population living out in these districts at, you know, starvation level. And there's the corruption of the media that works with the government to promote this perverse system, these perverse games. And I see that also going on in our culture. And the corruption of capitalism, the corruption of politics, and overemphasis on entertainments. These games are broadcast everywhere so that they keep the masses entertained and subservient to this system. I see a lot of parallels between the decline of the Roman Empire here, the very fact that these young people are called tributes, which was an official in the Roman Empire, and what's happening in Western society right now.
And I agree. And Rabbi Lorne, I wouldn't be surprised if Suzanne Collins, the author of these, had that in mind, and also may have had the corruption of the capitalistic system in mind, because, of course, though it's logical, the place where all the wealthy elites who are living in utter debauchery, it's called capital. So perhaps there's even this intent that we view capitalism in a negative sort of way. But it really is that way. The whole idea of bread and circuses that was part of this declining Roman Empire, devolving more and more into debauchery, seeking entertainment in ever more sensationalistic ways, certainly is very much a part of the Hunger Games. And I think that the movie makers did an exceptional job in building the ethos around the victimhood of the people living in the districts, and especially these children between 12 and 18 that are selected by lottery as tributes, really shows the victimhood of the people and the callousness of the elite.
I agree. And you see the simplicity, you know, more honesty in the common people who are living in the districts. You see the decadence of those in the capital who are living for the world. You see the decadence in their bizarre hairstyles, some of the bizarre beards. You and I were talking before about the beard of the game master.
Seneca by name. Again, another Roman name.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things in the Torah, I think, you know, there's a command in the Torah not to mar the edges of your beard, because I think that was part of the experience of the Jewish people in Egypt, which might have been decadent, that the Egyptians were known to cut their beards into, you know, fantastic, you know, unusual designs. And the Lord said, "I don't want that for my chosen people." So you see this decadence living for the world and hairstyles and beards and, you know, these clothes and food and furnishings and houses.
Yeah,
very interesting, Rabbi Glenn.
It really is. Now, there's one character in there that's kind of interesting because he represented to me where we are in America today as opposed to, you know, Rome or as opposed to this distant future. And that was Woody Harrelson's character. He plays a guy named Haymitch Abernathy. And Haymitch comes into this movie. Initially, he's part of this elite group, but the reason he's part of the elite is because he was the one survivor. You know, each survivor out of the 24 is basically absorbed into the elite within the capital, and he was one of those. But, you know, he's seen, you know, all this violence and had to survive it himself. He's had to watch people from his own district. And he, of course, is the primary sponsor of the two protagonists in the movie. And so he's supposed to give them advice how to survive, what to do. And he shows up in the movie. He's drunk and couldn't care less. And, you know, his character develops as the movie goes on. He becomes more caring. He sobers up. He realizes, I've got to help these two people survive. But he, to me, represents America today. You know, drunk with the perennial six-pack at your side, not really caring about anything other than just having a good time.
Why do you think he got to this position of he's drinking all the time, he's obviously unhappy, he's jaded? How do you think he got that way? He was a survivor of the Hunger Games and then got absorbed into the upper elite.
Perhaps, Rabbi Lorne, for the same reason that a lot of war veterans struggle with alcoholism or substance abuse, trying to basically drown out the sounds and drown out the sights that they've had to see in their lives to not have to deal with the pain. It's the wrong way to go about it, but it's a very real pain. And I think as a survivor of the Hunger Games, you know, in order to get there, he had to kill X number of people, namely 23.
So he didn't have to kill all 23 by himself.
Right. They all help themselves. That's true. But, you know, and it's sort of like there is a review, by the way, on the Hunger Games in World Magazine in this week's edition. And it compares it to it says every year the government chooses a girl and boy tribute from each district for something akin to American Idol meets Lord of the Flies. And it really is. It's And again, there's just such debauchery. Now, Rabbi Lorne, one of the things that troubled me most about this and why I wouldn't have gone to see it but for the opportunity to speak to my children about the implications of it is that it really is all about this kind of voyeuristic debauchery, this depravity in man, that we want entertainment. We don't want to have to deal with the realities of life, so we shut everything out. We turn on the TV and we want to be entertained. But, you know, like a drug, that desire within us, that lust for entertainment, in order to be satisfied, seems to need more and more sensationalistic things. I'll give you a perfect example. 40 years ago, when I was younger, the idea of cage fighting, this ultimate cage fight, ultimate fight club kind of thing, that would have been unthinkable. If they would have put that on TV, everybody would have been up in arms about that. Excuse the pun there, but everybody would have been upset about it.
Rabbi Glenn, why? What's wrong? I don't know much about cage fighting. What makes it?
It's, you know, barefisted, and people get bloodied and broken, and people have died in the cage fighting. It's not like boxing, but here's my point. We didn't start out with this cruel, brutal cage fighting. We started out with something more that seemed to be more benign, boxing. Well, they've got big padded gloves on. Never mind, they're beating each other up. And we're being entertained by it, but they've got, you know, these gloves on. It's not quite so brutal. Well, that lapses into other kinds of fighting. And eventually now we have cage fighting where it's bare-fisted and they're using elbows, knees, thighs. They are beating each other to a bloody pulp. And people are watching this on cable TV. And I'm not talking about on obscure channels. I'm talking about on like Spike TV and things like that. And I find it horribly repugnant. I get it that it's fun to watch a competition. I like sports as much as the next person, but this is just brutal. Now, we didn't get there overnight. It was incremental. And I would suggest, Rabbi Lauren, that it's just a matter of further incremental increases before now there's weapons in those cages. And then people are fighting to death in those cages, and we are watching it on TV.
Rabbi Glenn, I think you're right. I think we are seeing a steady decline in Western civilization, which used to be based on Jewish, Christian, biblical values. We have started turning our backs on God in the Western world, starting, I would say, in the 1960s. And you can see this decadence in so many areas, sexually, with entertainments, with corruption of politics, capitalism. It's affecting every aspect of Western society at this point.
It is. And, again, these things don't happen in a vacuum. They happen by series of decisions, series of steps that we take. And, as we look at more and more violence in the public schools, people killing other people, people killing themselves, all this violence, the drug abuse in public schools, did we really think that outlawing the reading of the Bible, did we really think that forbidding the reading of the Ten Commandments in the public school was going to have no effect? Did we really think that leaving a vacuum there, that it wasn't going to be filled with something else? I think we've been unrealistic. As soon as we basically shut the door on God in the public school system, we opened the door for Satan.
I think you're right, Rabbi Glenn. This toxic brew of secularism, secular humanism, materialism, which is epitomized by the capital of this, fantasy, the science fiction fantasy, really exemplifies trends in our society and where they ultimately lead. And it is not a pretty picture.
No, it isn't. And, the director of the movie and the producer, they did a very good job in creating sympathy with the people living in the district. Great sympathy with Katniss Everdeen, the heroine of the movie. They also created great hostility towards the people living in Capitol, and especially the game master Seneca, who's played by Wes Bentley, the same guy who played Blackheart in Ghost Rider. I guess he's got that kind of face. They put him in these dark roles. And Donald Sutherland, who's always playing these weird, twisted kind of characters as President Snow. So they do a very good job of creating sympathy and for the one, and hostility and contempt for the others. And part of the way they do this is everybody in Capitol, they've got weird, freakish hairstyles. The men are very effeminate. The women are very overdone. Everything is overdone. The makeup is overdone. The hair is bizarre colors. The clothing is ridiculous. So it's easy to have contempt for them because they are portrayed in a caricaturish way. And the thing that troubled me, Rabbi Lauren, is that each of us human beings, we are depraved by nature. And what frightens me is that people go to see this movie and they might walk out and have no idea that they are so much closer to being like those in Capitol than they would imagine. It's easy to point the finger and say, look at those wicked people getting their entertainment by watching other people killing each other. How is that different other than by a few degrees from people who sit back with their six pack and watch cage fighting today?
I agree with you, Rabbi Glenn. I thought this movie was tremendous, giving insight into human nature. There are some courageous people, some selfless people, but the majority seem to be selfish, depraved, bored, decadent, And I see that happening more and more in our society today. Well, this movie, I didn't read any of the books, so I don't know how it ends. But this movie did not leave me with any solution to this decadence and selfishness of humanity.
Yeah, well, the good news is that whereas God is not so much interested in rescuing countries and societies, he's very much interested in redeeming and rescuing lost and fallen human beings. And that's the good news, that whereas the world may very really be heading in that Hunger Games kind of direction, individually, God is at work, busy at work through the good news of Jesus the Messiah, rescuing human beings, so that for you and me and those who will take the gospel to heart, it doesn't have to be that way.
Yes, you know, we do have a message, although this, at least this first movie of Hunger Games, did not offer any solution, that we are to live not for this world and materialism and decadence, but to live for another world, God's world, which is a very real world. You know, we can be heroes like Katniss, but, you know, heroes for God. There is a real battle going on, but it's a spiritual battle, a moral battle, a living for others battle, not for self, living for God's world, not for this world kind of battle.
Yeah, you know, in this article, in this review of the movie, the writer brings up a very good point. They say this, this is a very poignant criticism of our culture and one that deserves to be taken seriously. But for all the beauty and high and moral high ground this story contains, it's just as true that the world Collins has created is terribly evil. Teenagers are dispatched throughout the movie by knives, swords, and mutated dogs. Adults are either too powerless or corrupt to help, and Katniss herself experiences an inward despair. But then it raises the question, for some viewers at least, especially younger or more impressionable teens, the Hunger Games may, and this is unfortunate, may produce the same deadening effect on the conscience that Collins seeks to warn us against.
You mean just watching this movie, you know, is a kind of voyeurism in and of itself and can further deaden people?
Yeah. It has that capacity to do that. I didn't want to see this movie. I felt constrained to because I wanted to be able to speak to my children about its implications, good and bad. And, you know, without seeing the movie, I mean, I'm not going to read the trilogy, but without seeing the movie, I have no way of identifying with the characters and bringing out points that are raised in the movie. So I really didn't want to see it. Because in part, I felt that I was contributing to that kind of voyeuristic tendency. So here's a movie that on the one hand decries it, but then on the other hand supplies it.
I agree.
All right, so what are we going to do? Anyway, you know, so I guess our mutual recommendation of this movie is with a certain caveat that while it has moral implications that really are worth being confronted with, not to mention the human depravity that is nearer to each and every one of us than we would like to admit, the movie is a violent, disturbing movie. It's an exceptionally well-made movie, which makes it all that much more powerful. If it had been done poorly, it'd be easy to write it off. But this movie was very well made, and for that reason, that much more disturbing.
And I think if we do see it and analyze it and reflect on how this is contrast to God's world, I think this could be helpful.
I agree, and that's our desire. Well, Rabbi Lauren, we're just about out of time. We've got another minute here to go, but a couple of things. We do want to still remind people that if you would like to celebrate the most wonderful and also the world's longest ongoing annual festival called Passover, celebrating our redemption out of Egypt and, of course, looking ahead to the greater Lamb of God, Yeshua, Jesus, we want to invite people to the Shema Yisrael Passover Seders. We're having two of them, April 6th and April 7th. It's $25 for adults, $12 for children 12 and under. And Rabbi Lauren, they can sign up right at our website, can't they?
Yes, we made it easy. If they just use the donate button and indicate as they go through the form that it's for the Passover Seder and which night, They can sign up right away through PayPal. It makes it really easy, Rabbi Glenn. Or they can call Jennifer at 248-593-5150, and Jennifer can help and direct them as well.
Well, thank you, Rabbi Lauren. And folks, we sure appreciate you tuning in to Jesus Made Me Kosher. We're at the end of today's program. But we really want to ask you to tell other people about this program. And if you are benefiting from Jesus Made Me Kosher and you'd like to hear more of it, please let us know. Either write us or give us a holler. Send us an email. Let us know that you really like the show. So on behalf of everybody at Shema, we want to say shalom, shalom.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.